Well, good morning, everybody. I'm Marty Bauman, the Chief Auditor and Director of Professional Standards at the PCAOB, and I'd like to welcome you all to this first meeting of the Standing Advisory Group, or SAG, as we sometimes refer to it, for 2010. And I'm impressed at Bella, the ability to get everybody seated so promptly and break up the lively dialogue that everybody was having. This meeting, like all SAG meetings, is also being webcast, so I'd like to also welcome all of you who are listening in. Being the first meeting of any year, we have several new members in attendance. In fact, of the 30 members of the 2010 Standing Advisory Group, 10 of the members are here for their very first SAG meeting. We, the PCAOB, had the pleasure of welcoming the 10 new members to the SAG at an orientation meeting that I know they all enjoyed back in January. So the 10 new members are as raring and ready to go as all of the continuing members are, and we look forward to their input as well. We also continue to have six observer groups at the table, and they're representatives from the Securities and Exchange Commission, the GAO, the IAASB, the Auditing Standards Board, the Department of Labor, and the FASB. Dan Gelzer, our acting chairman, is traveling. He's been on travel for the last week. He will be back this evening, and he will be here tomorrow. The other three members of the board are in attendance here today. We do have a tradition at the first meeting of each year, given the small group that sits around this table. So for the first meeting, we try to ask everybody to go around the table and ask everybody to introduce themselves again to us in name and organization. But certainly anything else you'd like to share with us, for instance, the new members, your excitement about being here for the first time. For the continuing members, your ongoing enthusiasm or whatever else it might be the case. Maybe we could just start off with that right away, and we could just hear from everybody, and I'll just start on my right with Bella.
Good morning. My name is Bella Rishon. I'm in the office of the Chief Auditor, and I'm still enthusiastic about being at the table for all the SAG meetings.
I'm Jennifer Rand. I'm with PCAOB, Office of the Chief Auditor.
I'm Jim Cox, professor at Duke Law School, NCAA champions in basketball.
Neri Bookspan, Standard & Poor's, and as you can probably tell, I'm thrilled to be here, especially at the beginning of spring.
I'm Jim Schnurr with Deloitte & Touche.
Good morning. I'm Jeff Mahoney. I'm the General Counsel of the Council of Institutional Investors.
Good morning. I'm John White at Crevasse, Swain & Moore. I've spent 3 years as an observer, and it's very exciting to be here when I can actually speak.
Charlie Niemeyer, PCAOB board member, and just want to thank everyone for being here and participating. It is very important to us.
Hal Schroeder, portfolio manager at Carlson Capital. I'm second here, and I am truly happy to be here, and I'd rather be here than testifying up at the Hill.
Kiko Harvey with Delta Airlines, and this is my first SAG meeting. And also, I lost my bracket when Duke won, so there you go.
Sam Ransola with KPMG.
Hi, I'm Peggy Foran, and I'm the Chief Governance Officer of Prudential, and I'm very excited to be back.
Good morning. Let's see if it's working. It's not on, is it?
Okay. No. Good morning. Tony Kendall with Mitchell & Titus.
Bill Gradison, an enthusiastic board member.
I'm Doug Anderson, the Corporate Auditor for Dow Chemical.
Good morning. I'm Gail Hansen. I'm the Deputy Executive Director for the State of Wisconsin Investment Board.
I'm Steve Rafferty with BKD.
Good morning. I'm Ian Dingwall. I am the Chief Accountant at the Employee Benefits Security Administration, which is part of the Labor Department. We oversee pension plans, who are big investors in public companies, and as such, the Secretary of Labor cares a lot about how well audits are done of public companies. So I'm here to observe you guys, and remember fondly the Maryland Duke game.
Good morning. I'm Jim Dawkins with GAO.
I'm Peter Prostakis. I'm with the FASB staff, and I'm here substituting for Tom Linsmeyer, who regrets that he was unable to attend.
I'm Wayne Carnall. I'm the Chief Accountant of the Division of Corporation Finance at the Securities and Exchange Commission, and unfortunately, last meeting I missed because I was in the Bahamas, and it was really a toss-up between attending the meeting or going on vacation, but I regretfully went on vacation. Time John White was no longer my boss, so I was allowed to take a little bit of vacation.
It feels a little bit like the Bahamas here in Washington today.
Mark Panucci with the SEC, Office of the Chief Accountant, and substituting for Paul Beswick.
Arnold Schilder, I'm the Chair of the International Auditing and Assurance Standards Board. I'm here for my second year, observing, also enjoying speaking rights. And for me, it's really special because while fully respecting the mandates that each board has, on the other hand, it's very important that we see where we can cooperate in the public interest. I'm very pleased with the context that we had so far with the board and the staff and the chief auditor. So I'm looking forward to another interesting meeting. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Daryl Schubert. I'm here to observe as chair of the Auditing Standards Board. I'm also a partner with Ernst & Young's national office in Cleveland.
Good morning. Mike Gallagher, PricewaterhouseCoopers. I'm one of the 10 enthusiastic new members that Marty mentioned at the outset. Happy to be here.
Hi, I'm Denny Beresford, also one of the new members. I am a professor at the University of Georgia, also the chairman of the audit committee of three fairly large publicly held corporations. I'm pleased to be a new member, but I'm also getting ready to comment on the recent proposal on communications with audit committees.
Good morning. Paul Sobel. I'm a returning member, the chief auditor at Mirren Corporation in Atlanta.
Good morning. I'm Arch Archambeau with Grant Thornton, also a new member, and looking forward to participating.
Good morning. I'm Jamie Miller with General Electric.
I'm Barbara Roper, Director of Investor Protection for the Consumer Federation of America.
Kevin Riley with Ernst & Young, also a new member.
Lynn Turner, I'm an old member. I think I've been on it along with Sam and Damon since it was initially formed, and it's been my pleasure to attend the various meetings over that time period. I also serve on the board of two institutional investors and on the audit committees of both of those, including one of which I chair.
Good morning. I'm Gary Kaberick of Xerox Corporation. I'm a returning member, and among other advisor groups, I'm also on the FASB's equivalent of this group as well, and I'm the FEI's chairman of their FASB subcommittee.
Good morning. I'm Kurt Schacht. I'm an old member, but not as old as Lynn Turner, and I'm from the CFA Institute, the Chartered Financial Analyst people.
Good morning. Wayne Collins with BDO, and I continue to be enthusiastic to be here.
Hi, I'm Mary Hartman Morris. I work for CalPERS, and I'm very excited about being here. I'm one of the new members, and I'm hopefully going to bring the investor's perspective, so thank you.
I'm Galen Hansen, a continuing member of this group. I'm a partner with Earhart, Keith, Steiner, and Hotman in Colorado. I am also involved in a couple of their regulatory activities, including the Colorado State Board of Accountancy, and I'm a board member of the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy.
Larry Salva, Comcast Corporation.
Sharon Firestein, I do litigation consulting at Marks Paneth & Schrone, and it's my second year, I think, as a SAG member.
Dean Andriyanko, Office of the Chief Auditor. I especially look forward to our discussion on the responsibilities of the principal auditor that I will lead shortly. Thanks.
Well, thank you, everybody, for those your willingness to introduce yourself and some colorful comments along the way. Denny, we appreciate that you're, Denny Beresford, we appreciate you're going to comment on that standard. But you know you have a longer period of time, and most letters don't come until the very last day. So if you comment sooner, that'll be a first. Also, Professor Cox, I'm surprised you didn't have any comments for that poor little college that you beat up on. Butler.
It's not nice to beat up on Cinderella, so we're not going to make any remarks about it. So.
And we did have one other member of the SAG just sit down and arrive. And if you want to introduce yourself, Professor?
Doug Carmichael. I teach at Baruch College in New York.
Thank you very much. Before we begin our discussions, I'd like to spend just a few minutes reviewing the agenda that we'll be covering for the next day and a half. The topics that we've selected to be discussed are very important issues to the PCOB, and we're very much looking forward to your valuable input. This morning we'll cover the subject of the responsibilities of the principal auditor and matters related to multi-location audits. Certainly measured by market cap, multi-location audits represent probably well over 95% of all audits. So the importance of the topic is obvious. Issues pertaining to principal auditor have been the subject of a number of inspection findings, and we'll talk about that those types of issues and questions as we go through this discussion. We'll be addressing three major issues in the discussion around principal auditor: the decision to serve as the principal auditor, the decision whether or not to refer to the work of other auditors, including auditors in your affiliated network, the work of the principal auditor should do with respect to the oversight or supervision of the other auditor, again, including whether that other auditor is part of a network firm or not, and thereby in that decision whether or not the principal auditor, how the principal auditor assumes responsibility for all of the work of the other auditors. Issues include both the quality controls of the other firm as well as the audit work of that other firm in connection with the particular audit. The existing standard under AU 543 was written back in 1972 and adopted as part of the board's interim standards. We have a project that we announced last October that was on our standard setting agenda to address this guidance. This is a very important topic to us, and we look forward to your advice. Dima on my left, Dima Andrianko, Associate Chief Auditor, will be leading this standard-setting project with Greg Skates. Dima led the project on the recently issued standard on engagement quality review, and given how well he managed that project and how easy that was, we think he's ready for this substantial challenge. After that discussion, we'll break for lunch. I do want to mention that during lunch, our Chief Ethics Officer, Barbara Hannigan, we'll make a short presentation regarding ethical considerations for members of the Standing Advisory Group. Barbara always has valuable insights and reminders for all of us, and so we'll look forward to that discussion. This afternoon, and then continuing into tomorrow morning, we'll discuss the auditor's reporting model, addressing matters such as whether the current reporting model is meeting the needs of investors, the benefits and shortcomings of the current model, which some call a pass-fail model. The report either says the financials present fairly or they don't, but some say it doesn't include a lot more information than that. The expressed need from some investors for more information from the auditor about the audit or about the financial statements. Also with respect to the audit report, whether the audit report clearly expresses the responsibility of the auditor for detecting material misstatements due to error or fraud, and finally whether the auditor's responsibilities for detecting material misstatements due to fraud should be changed in any fashion, and if so, how should those responsibilities be changed? So this is a very important topic. It's very broad, really, in the types of things we want to get at. We'll first introduce the topic. We've asked a number of members of the Standing Advisory Group to give some to be panelists to give a brief introduction to the subject. Then we're going to have breakout sessions later in the afternoon where we can get together and discuss these matters in smaller groups. I think this is really one of the more important topics we can discuss. It gets to the heart of the shareholder-auditor relationship. What are the auditor's responsibilities, and what should the auditor communicate to the shareholders about his or her work? Associate Chief Auditor Bella Rifshin will lead this discussion and this project. Tomorrow morning we'll have reports back to this entire group from each of the three breakout sessions, and we'll have a wrap-up discussion then at the table again tomorrow morning for everybody to be able to express your final views on this matter. Again, this is a very important issue, the auditor's report, auditor's responsibility for fraud. We're looking for a lot of, certainly a lively discussion and input from this group on how you think we should proceed, if we should proceed as well, with a standard-setting project in this area. As I mentioned earlier, Dan Gelzer, our acting chairman, could not be with us today. And as a result of that, we've postponed until tomorrow some matters that we typically cover on day one. For instance, tomorrow, I'll give a standard-setting, an update on our standard-setting agenda and the projected milestones for standards that we're working on and when we think there'll be new standards will be issued, therefore. I'll seek your input on the agenda. And in light of current developments in financial reporting or the economy or other emerging issues in the marketplace, ask you if there are other standard-setting matters not on our agenda that ought to be. We'll appreciate getting your candid input into that in terms of what other things we ought to be thinking about putting on the standard-setting agenda. One of the points some of the SAG members raised at the last meeting was, how do inspections findings inform our standard-setting agenda or the standard-setting process? I'll also include some comments in that regard in discussion tomorrow about the standard-setting agenda. On the topic of emerging issues and seeking input from SAG members in terms of other items that, you know, we should discuss or should address, in an email that we sent out, a couple of SAG members did respond back with topics they thought we should discuss. And I'll tee them up now just so you can think about them because they're not on the agenda, but they have been raised by other SAG members for discussion as part of the emerging issues discussion tomorrow. The first one pertains to audit risks pertaining to impairments. It has been noted, or it was noted also by the person who brought this up, that many PCOB inspections findings address audit deficiencies regarding auditing of impairments of long-lived assets. Also, it was pointed out that as the FDIC has taken over a number of banking institutions over the past couple of years, given the economic conditions, the FDIC has taken large write-downs in connections with those failed banks after they were taken over. So questions about the audit risks pertaining to the impairment of those assets, including the allowance for loan losses. So we were asked to consider those issues as part of the emerging issues. The second subject that was brought up was, and it's been reported in a number of instances in a variety of different articles and noted elsewhere, some pressure and reductions on audit fees. The SAG member who brought this up said it's noted that issuers were aggressively seeking reductions in their audit fees, including a greater willingness to, quote, bid the audit out in order to get substantially lower fees. The SAG member expressed concern about
the impact of this on audit quality. So in advance, again, of tomorrow's discussion of emerging issues, I wanted to bring these two topics up so you could think about them. Also, if there are other topics that anybody else around this table feels that we should be discussing as part of the standard setting session and emerging issues, please feel free to either mention them now, if you'd like, or tomorrow, or advise me of the topics anytime during today, if you'd like. After this discussion on our standard setting agenda and emerging issues, Dan Gelzer will give an update on how the PCAOB is responding to various recommendations made as part of the U.S. Treasury Advisory Department's Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession. Again, this topic was raised by a number of SAG members at the last meeting, and we know this is a topic of great interest to many of you. So Dan will give an update on our activities with respect to those recommendations. Our final subject tomorrow on the agenda will be a report regarding the risk assessment standards. As you know, we reproposed a suite of 7 standards in December 2009 regarding the auditor's assessment of and response to risk in the audit. These are 7 critical standards that are really foundational in nature and really set the framework for future standard setting by the PCAOB. The comment period on the reproposed standards ended on March 2nd, and Keith Wilson, Associate Chief Auditor who leads that project, will provide a summary of the comments received and our plans for proceeding with this standard setting initiative. Finally, I have some just very minor administrative matters. As a reminder, when anybody around the table wants to speak, please just stand your name card on its edge, and we'll recognize you to speak. We typically try to recognize people in the order in which the name cards are stood up, but as we mentioned last time, sometimes that results in disconnected thoughts because one member may have a totally different thought than what was previously discussed. So I will from time to time just ask if somebody wants to respond to the point that was just made, and in that case, if you feel we went out of order, at least I think we're doing it for a reason to keep the particular point going in the right direction. I think that concludes my introductory comments, and I guess before we proceed with the first discussion item on the principal auditor, I'd like to just ask anybody if they have any questions or comments about the agenda for the 2 days or any other matters they'd like to bring up at this point in time. And I do want to mention, I know John Weiss said you're glad that you're a member now and you have right to speak at the table, but as an observer, you had that right too, and I just want to make sure that the observers know that we look forward to your input throughout the sessions as well. Are there any comments? Okay, well, if not, then I'm going to proceed to turn the microphone over to Dima Andrienko. Dima will lead our discussion. We sent out a briefing paper on the responsibilities of the principal auditor. And Dima, it's all yours.
Thank you, Marty. The responsibilities of the principal auditor is a new topic for the SAG. However, the current auditing standard that establishes these responsibilities is not new to the profession. As Marty mentioned, AU 543, part of audit performed by other independent auditors, was issued in the early 1970s. Information from the board's inspections and enforcement investigations to date suggests that on some audits performed under the current standard, procedures performed by the principal auditor in relation to the work of other auditors were not sufficient to ensure that the other auditors were qualified to perform the work, or that the work performed by the other auditors provided the necessary audit evidence. Separately, the IAASB and the Auditing Standards Board of the AACPA have recently developed
their standards, which deal with group audits that involve component auditors. The board is currently considering these developments and analyzing the existing requirements for the principal auditor. And today we are asking for your input in determining whether to revise certain provisions of AU 543. We have planned today's discussion around the three topics that you had in the briefing paper, in which Marty introduced. So briefly again, we'll plan to start with discussing the decision to serve as principal auditor. Then we're going to move on to discussing the requirements that are applicable to both methods of reporting, and that is when the principal auditor refers to the other auditor or when the principal auditor assumes responsibility for the work of the other auditor. And last, but certainly not least, would like to get your views on the requirements for the principal auditor when he or she assumes responsibility for the work of the other auditor. Before we get to the questions, I just wanted to clarify that when we refer to the principal auditor and the other auditor, we refer to two separate audit firms, but they may or may not be in the same audit network. Here's our first set of questions. They relate to the auditor's decision of whether or not his or her participation is sufficient to serve as principal auditor. And I just read it off the screen. What criteria should be included in a new standard to describe when an auditor is qualified to serve as principal auditor? Should there be any quantitative criteria? In other words, should a new standard require that the principal auditor obtain audit evidence for a certain minimum percentage of the issuer's revenue or assets? Should the qualitative criteria currently included in AU 543 be retained or modified? And I'm just going to open the floor for discussion. Doc Carmichael?
I'd like to give unvarnished background why we got the standard. There were basically two reasons. The AICPA legal counsel advised that the division of responsibility would hold up in U.S. courts. That wasn't true in other countries. They had Atlantic acceptance case and Pacific acceptance case and the other two hemispheres. So the fact that other countries around the world don't, for the most part, recognize divided responsibility is really a byproduct of that. And that legal liability background is very important. The other reason for the standard, frankly, was displacement of CPA firms. There was concern that the smallest firms would be the most likely to be displaced if there were a number of auditors auditing a client, and there was a desire to keep that. The AICPA was threatened with an antitrust action by smaller firms when they considered extending the divided responsibility notion to equity investees as well as investors. One final thing on serving as the principal auditor. There was a time in the 70s when bank holding companies had a number of banks, and the usual audit relationship was that one large major firm would do the bank holding company and others would do the underlying banks. And so there were some circumstances where the audits of the underlying banks accounted for in excess of 90% of the total assets of the entity, yet the principal auditor giving an opinion on the overall financial statements, audited less than 10%. There was one firm in particular who shall remain nameless that we had a very extensive practice in that regard. They were brought up on ethics charges at the AACPA for doing that. The action was against the partners on certain engagements. The managing partner of the firm said, I made that decision. I should be the one responsible. Charge me. The ethics division staff thereupon charged him and there was a great to-do, and the charges were dropped. That's my unvarnished background. Thank you.
Barbara Roper.
I just had a question about this point. You say in the briefing document that inspections and investigations showed that in some engagements the procedures performed weren't adequate. Was there any evidence to suggest that the procedures around the decision to serve as the principal auditor weren't adequate? I mean, why are we considering the change? What's the rationale behind considering the change? What's the problem we're trying to address? Because that's not clear to me from the materials we received.
I think there's a number of issues we're trying to address, and we'll get to them throughout this discussion, but your question is a good one. I think in this first issue of what should be the decision-making process of the ability of the auditor to decide whether or not to be the principal auditor, we've come across situations where an auditor may be signing a set of financial statements but performing very little of the audit work. The company's operations and headquarters may be in another country, let's just say China, and maybe 95% of its business and operations and people, et cetera, are in China, and another firm is doing that work. And maybe the U.S. auditor may not speak that language. And so the question is, what should be the requirements that U.S. auditor has to go through, the process, before he or she can decide, A, can I be the principal auditor for this particular issuer that's filing with the SEC? And, you know, what are the criteria I have to go through to be that principal auditor? So there's many other issues we'll get to, but that's really the first question we're kind of saying is, what's the decision-making process that auditor has to go through?
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Galen Hansen.
Yeah, I just as follow on to Barbara's question about, you know, what's the problem here? It seems to me that we ought to go back to what Dr. Carmichael was talking about and his unvarnished background here with this. And before getting into the how questions, which is, seems like where we're going, rather address the question of whether. And whether or not we need to retain this principal auditor concept, especially in light of where the International Accounting Assurance Standards Board is going with their standard, where they don't recognize that. It is a little bit odd to me in this day and age where we need to have this sort of arrangement, and it would seem to me that whoever's doing the audit, whoever's signing that opinion, yeah, that needs to be clear, and they need to be taking that responsibility on, and I don't see the need for a shared responsibility.
I just wanted to make an observation that in certain cases, and I think we try to describe those cases in the briefing paper. If there is a late year acquisition, the principal auditor or the auditor that was retained by the company early in the year might not be in a position to reach out to the other auditor and perform the procedures that might otherwise be necessary. It certainly, there might be cases like that.
If I could respond, and I would agree that those would be, I think, the types of things that you look at, and also this whole question of equity method investees and whether or not that is a separate situation that would justify sort of this divided responsibility attribution.
I do think the Auditing Standards Board that's also taking a look at this issue is retaining the possibility for divided responsibility, even though, as you said, the ISA, applicable ISA in this area, requires one auditor to take total responsibility. I am accurate on that. Is that correct?
That is correct. We are retaining.
Sorry about that.
We are retaining the divided responsibility, and one of the major issues for discussion was the equity investment, where it's not possible to audit the entire entity, and you need to be able to divide responsibility.
Jim Cox.
Yeah, I'm just picking up on Dr. Carmichael's remark. I do think it important that the attribution follow what would be expected with the liability in the regime. And so, for example, just to back up, I find it rather curious that in the attestation function of the auditors that they're talking about management statements fairly presenting the position, but not fairly presenting who did the work in making that attestation. That is to say that if you could get into a situation where the example that was used, where a firm depended upon 90% of the work to be done by somebody whose name never appears on the certified financial statements, creates a curious result. What's effectively going on, as I understand it, is we've balkanized the auditing process on particular engagements, and for a variety of commercial reasons. But one of the consequences of the commercial reasons is to go to the point that Dr. Carmichael makes, and that is that responsibility to investors who rely on these financial statements doesn't follow the work that occurs. And that is to say, there are practical problems of for private litigants, not for the SEC, to be able to recoup any losses they may have suffered because of the poor work done by an unnamed auditor in a foreign country. And so I would just think that if we go down this road, that the one that would be most consistent with the mission of fair reporting would be some disclosure, whether it has to be in the document that reaches investors or something that's filed with the regulators, another question, of exactly what the allocations of responsibilities were in certain areas, and then have it go from there.